Laguna Beach, March 31st, 2013, Sunday Peace Lecture.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare
Hare Krishna. Jnanati Nirambasya Jnanam Jana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Vena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Welcome to everyone tonight at this special place in a special time. Actually, everything's special in this world, but because of an illusory concept of life, I don't realize that every moment is unique. And there's not one person in this world that's the same as another. And there's not one particle or atom that's the same as another in this universe. Everything and everyone is unique, and every situation is unique. But sometimes I become depressed and I think, what a boring world. What a boring life I have. And this is a kind of illusion, forgetting that I'm actually part of something much bigger. And there's a way in which I can become contained within a much smaller world than I'm part of. The world of my mind, and this is a part of what we call in the Bhagavad Gita, what Krishna calls in the Bhagavad Gita, the false ego, or a false sense of self. When I identify myself with that which I'm not. And this is a kind of a predicament, because actually I'm not my body, but I'm just a passenger in the body. The body's a machine, and that can be easily verified if you look at it by yourself. You can introspect and you can look and see at the various parts of your body and how it works and runs. Sometimes when you lie down to sleep or just to take a nap, you can notice that the heart is pumping. Normally, I don't notice it. It just works. And it speeds up when I walk up a hill, and it slows down when I don't. When I'm going downhill, and when I eat food, the food's digested, and it's distributed to all parts of the body quite naturally, and I don't have to think about it. And I usually don't think about it. However, I have a kind of a conception that I'm the body, and this is me. And this is what we call false ego, or a false sense of self, because I'm something different from the body. But because I project myself into the body, I say that this is my body, and my is a kind of a projection. For instance, there are many cars outside, and one of them might be yours. Anybody drive here tonight? So you have a car outside? It's your car, right? However, it's not really much different than everyone else's car in Laguna Beach, except it is to you. Because if someone scrapes it or if it gets stolen, then it's a problem for you. If somebody else's car gets stolen down the street, it's not a problem for you. You won't even think about it, right? Because it's not your car. So, cars made out of metal and glass, and who knows what else. I shudder to think. And then I attach myself to it and I say, this is my car. And then it becomes a kind of a burden to me. What could be useful also? But I identify with it as mine. So we have my I, and then there's my, where I extend myself into my car. What else?
My house.
My house. I have to protect my house. What else? My family. Cell phone, my cell phone. My country, how about my team? People become very absorbed in their team. Probably teams down here. You have teams in Southern California, and people watch the teams, follow the teams, and when their team wins, they say what? We won. And when their team loses, they become depressed and want to commit suicide. Why? You don't care about the team that just lost in New York or somewhere else, unless you're attached to that place. So the only thing we really have to do with the material world is our attachments. That's our only connection to the material world. And just like in a dream, sometimes I'll see that a tiger is chasing me and I'll begin perspiring. And my friend is watching me from across the room as he's studying his biology book, and he's thinking, he must be having a bad dream. And when I wake up, I realize that there's no tiger chasing me. And in a similar way, my work and my conceptions in this world are like a dream. And as a matter of fact, the energy of the material world is described in the Bhagavad Gita by Krishna to be quite insubstantial, and that it's always changing. And then he says that people who identify with the material energy have a very different outlook on life from people who identify with spiritual energy. And he shows the difference between the two. He describes or he defines them. He says in the Bhagavad Gita, 7th chapter, Bhumir apo analo vayu kammano buddhir eva cha hankara itiya me binna prakritir ashtata. Earth, water, fire, air, ether means space, mind, it's a material element, but it's very subtle, mind, you can observe it, intelligence, and then ego. Ego is kind of the junction between the material world and my consciousness, the kind of the connecting point, the nexus between the two, where I falsely connect to the material world. I have this false conception that I am this world. It's also considered to be, sometimes it's in the counting of material elements, that's also considered an element, that gap. So what do we have? Earth? Let's just analyze your body as I say it, see if you have any earth in your body. Earth? Anything? Is it working for you or not? Do you have any earth in your body? Feel your knee. That's kind of earthy, isn't it? Yes or yes?
Yes.
Earth, water. Definitely feel some water. Come on. Shake your arm. Squeeze it. There's definitely water. It's about 80%. 80% of the body is water. If you take it all out, you get earth. A bunch of earth. About this much. And then fire. It feels... You're hit 98.6 degrees normally. Homeostasis maintains that temperature, around that temperature, which is amazing in and of itself. But we have fire. That fire element is within the cells. They're working by this. The metabolism is burning up, actually, the cells and so forth. And there's fire there. Earth, water, fire, air. Take a breath. Exhale. There's air. And then ether is the space. It's the space in which the subtle elements rest, like mind. And take a minute, close your eyes, and just be the observer of your mind. See if you can see your mind zipping around someplace to the next. Like, why do we have to close our eyes? It's a useful experiment to be the observer of your mind. And if you can observe your mind, if you can be still enough to observe your mind, rather than to be carried by your mind, you can open your eyes, from one place to the next, which normally what happens, the mind moves around, and I identify with the mind, and I do whatever it says. And to objectify these elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, and see that I'm the observer of the mind, I'm the observer of the body, and the different elements in the body, helps to come to an identification of myself. Now we come to intelligence. Intelligence, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, 3rd chapter, Indriyani priyanyahur indribhya paramanaha manasastu parabudhir yobhure paratastusaha. Lowest of all are the senses. The body is made of senses. And above the senses is the mind. And above the mind, the intelligence. So there's an intellect. And the intellect has the function of doubting, of discriminating. The mind accepts or rejects. The mind, the intelligence can overrule the mind. And above the mind and the intelligence is the is me, is actually the spiritual soul, the consciousness. I am the consciousness within the body. And when that consciousness leaves the body, then the body becomes inanimate. And therefore, you can observe when someone leaves their body, and Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita, what is the process of leaving the body? Ukramantam sitam bhapi bunjanam ba gunam vitam. Vimudanana paschanti paschanti jnana chakshusha. He says that ukramantam, krama means to step. So ukramantam, take a step outside your body. Sometimes people do this when any nurses in here or paramedics? Raise your hand if you have any nurses. Okay, nobody have any kind of attack tonight because we don't have any doctors. Or doctors? My friend Satyadev Prabhu was a paramedic for 20 years and he told me that many times he would bring people in on the gurney. They had some severe trauma to the body. So severe that they momentarily or temporarily left their body. And when they came back in. This is what we call near-death experience. Verifiable. There are many different accounts of this, that people observe their body from a different angle of vision. Normally, I'm within my body. At night, when I sleep, I actually disassociate myself with the gross body. I'm not thinking that I'm the gross body. I'm there slobbering on the pillow and of snoring or whatever I do, and then I'm off somewhere in a dreamland. I'm actually not identifying with the gross body. These are different states of consciousness. And then there's these near-death experiences where I may be able to temporarily, because of trauma, observe that I'm not the material body at all. I'm completely separate from it. And many times people actually observe that, oh, that's kind of gross. And then they have to come back in to that gross body. Because the soul, the consciousness, is very subtle. And this body, as I said, is a machine, and it's made of gross matter. It's different. So Krishna says in the Gita, aparyamitastanyam prakritim vidime param jiva bhuta mahabaho yayedam daryate jagat. Besides this material energy, which we already named, the elements, you can count them, there is a higher energy, which is the living entity. We say the living entity, or what in Sanskrit is the jiva. That's the living force, the actual conscious soul or of the body. And when it leaves, ukramantam, it literally steps out of this body and it goes into another body. But the soul is never extinguished. It never dies. It lives forever. It always has lived. It's eternal. No death, no birth for the soul. But what I consider death is my giving up all my attachments. Practically, you can die while you're living. People have this happen all the time. They feel as though they're dead because their attachments, something they're very much attached to, becomes taken away from them. Practically, that is our life, our attachments. So if I lose a loved one, practically I feel like I've died inside. Or if you lose everything, people lose everything in life sometimes. Their house is swept away in a tsunami. This happened in Japan a few years ago. People are just sitting there, and a few minutes later, everything they had worked for, all their family members, everything, washed out to sea, gone. And how do people feel after that? Like they've died, practically. And in Bhagavad Gita, the scene is set on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Arjuna comes onto the battle. He's the great warrior. His driver, Krishna, then says, here, I'll take you to the... Arjuna says, take me to the battlefield in the midst of both the armies so I can see who's come here to fight. And then when he starts seeing who he has to fight with, and he says, if I win the fight and I kill all my enemies, they're actually my relatives. I'd rather quit, or I'd rather, it's better to die. Because really, that's what we're killing. When we leave this body, what the traumatic part of it is leaving behind all that we're attached to. So we say, sometimes, die to live. You have to die to live. You have to voluntarily see what is not me in this world and detach myself from that burden gradually. So this is a kind of introspective process which is recommended for keeping focused on what is most important, and that is the self, the higher self, and how to make spiritual advancement. So as I said, people who are more identified with matter in the body and think that I am this body, they may spend an inordinate amount of time worrying about the body and dealing with issues that relate to the body. Whereas those who are focused on the soul, on the spiritual consciousness within the body, they have a different kind of lifestyle. And so Krishna consciousness begins where one realizes that I really have nothing to do with this material world. And that my real interest, my real wealth in life comes from developing my spiritual side. And there are different philosophies, obviously, in this world that all try to address the question about what is the purpose of life, how to attain it, and so forth. Some philosophers see the world and our attachments and say that desire, because it leads to misery, is bad. Therefore, let's extinguish desire altogether. That might solve the problem, right? Might it? If I did extinguish all desire? This is that, yes or yes? No? Okay. According to Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, nahi kaschit shanamapi jatu tishchet karma krit karyate hyavasha karma sarva prakriti jarugunai. You can't extinguish the jiva, the living force, the soul. And the nature of the soul is to have desire. It's conscious, it has impetus, it has volition. Volition means, very interesting word and concept, free choice, free will. You have free will. The soul has free will. And that never goes away. It's eternal. You always have that. That's who you are. That's your nature. You're a unit of consciousness with free will. And the Vedas also say that we are looking for happiness. We're looking for pleasure. Is that true about you? Okay, yes or yes?
Yes.
Good. Because you don't wake up in the morning and say, please let the IRS call today. Where's that certified letter from the IRS asking me to come in? You don't do that, right? Okay. Or let my car, the axle on my car, break on the freeway and so forth. We try to ward off suffering. We're trying to avoid suffering. We try to find where happiness is. We study our books carefully. Why? Because knowledge is power. If I have power through knowledge, then I can control my environment. And I can find freedom from suffering. And I can find happiness and so forth. So, some philosophers say, however, just extinguish all desire, be nothing, and then shanti shanti. There's zero. So if we look at a number line, we have the negative numbers. That would be material life. I'm working hard, and I'm going where? Going down. because I spend and I incur debt in this world. There's a debt. This is called karma. Karma means I have a debt to pay, and therefore I must work hard. It's the rule of the material world, you have to work hard. Is it not?
Yes.
Correct, yeah. Everyone has to work hard. Forced to work hard. Krishna says this in the Bhagavad Gita. Everyone's forced to work hard in this world because we have a debt to pay. It's the law. You have to work hard to pay off this debt. This is negative numbers. I may think I'm enjoying through identifying with matter and trying to get stimulation through the senses and so forth. But actually what I'm doing, it's like buying on credit. And you may enjoy for a little while, but later on you have to pay it back with interest and penalties and so forth. And the scriptures say, actually, that we've been in the material world for so long, and we have such a big debt that we can't pay it off. Impossible. In fact, the Yoga Sutras say, we store much of our karma. It's like you have a house, a big house, you fill it up with stuff, and then what do? You go into those special storage places. That's a growth industry nowadays. You get a storage place and you put all the rest of your stuff in there. So we have so much karma, we can't even expend it all in one lifetime. There's millions of lifetimes to go to use up just the karma I've created from previous lifetimes. So there's no end to the karma. It's like an endless ocean of obligation and debt. Not very good. Better get it fixed. So some people spend on the credit card, then they have to pay it back. That's negative numbers. So then someone thinks, well, I'll just obliterate everything and I'll come to what? Up the number line? I come up and I land on zero. But zero, after all, is zero. And it's not a place where I can stay. I can't stay on zero. Just like if you don't like your job. Anybody here? You love your job. Raise your hand. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Anyway, I won't go there. Let's not talk about it. It's Sunday. Okay, so anyway, let's say somebody somewhere doesn't like their job and they go on strike. We've seen this before, especially in earlier eras. People had more power to strike. Hare, Hare Krishna. So Krishna. On strike means that I'm temporarily out of work, but I have to go back. Sooner or later, I have to go back to work. I can't stay on strike forever, right? So there is positive numbers, and that's what Krishna consciousness is. It starts from what we call the Brahma-Bhuta platform, the spiritual platform. No longer preoccupied by the material nature, because it's the same thing all over and over again, but in different combinations and permutations. It's always the same thing. It just comes in slightly different packages and flavors, but it's the same thing over and over again. And so Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that Bahunam jamanamante jnanavam mam prapadyate. Vasudeva sarvamiti sa mahatma sudurlabha. After wrangling through the different varieties of the material world and different combinations, permutations, flavors, and realizing that this is negative numbers, one comes to the spiritual platform and gains this positive impetus to search for God. To find out what is the positive life. And that means the life of happiness. So this is described by Krishna as called the Brahma-Bhuta platform. Brahma-Bhuta Prasanatma. And he says, when you come to the spiritual platform, how is everybody?
Great.
Okay? When you come to the spiritual platform, then you feel joyful. For no reason at all. Because that's your constitutional position when you're situated spiritually. You're just happy all the time. For no reason. Because that's just who you are. That's your constitutional position. To be joyful, happy. So Brahma-Bhuta means when you come to the spiritual platform, past zero, and you start into the positive numbers, there's a... Imagine the material world's an ocean of debt. We already talked about that. That's not very good, right? That's the part we want to fix. Then you come to zero, and that's not very interesting because you're just on strike. You don't like the material world, so you've stepped out of it. You're protesting. But it's not enough. You have to have joy. You have to have happiness. You have to have pleasure. That's called ananda, bliss. That's what everyone wants. That's why everyone reads the newspaper. That's why everyone goes to school. That's why everyone goes to work. That's why everyone does everything. They're trying to find Ananda, but looking for it in the wrong places. But Ananda is there, no doubt about it. And it comes in the positive numbers. And that's the teaching of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He comes in, now see, he's dancing. They're all dancing. Why? Because that's what you do when you're happy. People dance when they're happy. They don't put on a tie and pick up a briefcase. But you dance. Now that's a different kind of movement. That's the movement that goes on in the spiritual world. And that's what a spiritual movement is. It means you're not going to work. You're going to play. When you play, you're happy. It's Ananda. That's the positive numbers. And now imagine you come to the positive numbers and you see that just as the material world is an ocean, an endless ocean of death, the spiritual world is an endless ocean of possibility, of improvement, of happiness. And there's no end to it. It goes on forever. You can always, it's ever expanding. What do you think you'll do when, if you actually glimpse that and you see, I have no more debt or connection with the material world. Even just practically speaking, I'm not even talking esoterically about a spiritual experience. What if someone just came in here and said, you know, they put down their briefcase and they said, listen, I'm a billionaire. Anybody, you want me to take care of all your affairs? You come up your lineup, I'll take care of all your affairs. Finish. No more worries anymore. How do you feel? Pretty crummy, right? So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Sarva dharman paritya ja, mame kam sharanam raja, ahang tvam sarva papi bhyo moksha ishami masaji. Comes along with an offer. And he says, you know, and he's not condemning anybody. He's completely liberal. Bhagavad Gita is not about religious fanaticism. Krishna's not a religious fanatic. He simply presents, here's your situation. Here's who you are. Here's who I am. This is what the material world is. And here's the spiritual world. Now choose. Take your choice. And there's an offer that comes along. If you just take it, then you get it. That's all you have to do is take it. That's why he says, just surrender to me and I'll deliver you from all sinful reaction and all this debt and everything and you can just dance. Would you like to? No, thanks. Not interested. I'm busy. There's a woman who carries sticks for a living. Every day, arduous journey up the hill to sell her sticks to make a meager existence. And one day as she's going up the hill, she trips and falls. And all the sticks land on the ground. And she can't load them on her head herself. Someone helps her at the bottom of the hill. And she gets on her knees and she prays, please help me. God, please help me. Please. And she's crying. So he appears before her and says, I will help you. Please tell me. What can I do? And she says, please, put the sticks back on my head. Put the sticks on my head. I have to make my 50 cents today. And this is my choice over and over again because of misinformation, because of false attachments to things I think are important, but they're actually not. They're vaporous. They're dreamlike. But they persist because I don't have something better and I don't have superior information. So the Vedas are superior information. And you know it when you see it. It's self-effulgent. It's not a matter of speculation. When something is self-luminous, then you know it for yourself. And that's what the real experience of reading something that actually gives you knowledge, it speaks to you in the same way that that voice inside your heart speaks to you, to give you deeper intelligence. We have, not only are we the soul, are we beyond the body, but there's also a friend. This is called Sukrit. And this is something everyone can relate to. And if you can't now, you will later. But Sukrit means the very, very best friend that we have. Not the kind of friend who is here today and gone tomorrow, but the kind of friend that sticks with you no matter what, without any judgment, and is always taking care of you in all circumstances. Good kind of friend to have, right? That's Krishna. Krishna is the super soul. He's there within everyone's heart as the Suhrit. No matter what we do, where we go, he's always there. And the Vedas say, Nityo Nityanam, Chaitanas Chaitananam, Eko Bahunam, Yogiditati Kama. There are many eternals. Every person in this room is an individual eternal soul. That's mind-boggling in and of itself. And it's what I mentioned in the beginning. We take much for granted, but don't take anybody for granted. They're actually, every person is a part of God. And besides that, the multiple eternals we see everywhere, there's one supreme eternal of whom we are a part. And that's Krishna, the supreme person, the supreme personality of Godhead. And he expands himself into many different forms, and one of the ways that he expands himself is the super soul who sits next to us in the heart, just as there are two birds sitting in a tree. And one bird is eating and the other bird is observing. And then the verse says, Yo viditati kaman. There's that one supreme bird is supplying all the desires to the other individual bird. Where does everything come? How do our desires become fulfilled? By Krishna. Krishna is fulfilling all our desires. Of course, I may not be asking for the right things. In one verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna is described to be like a desire tree, or to be a desire tree. A desire tree, described in the Vedas, is a tree that if you sit under it, it will give you whatever you want. Any desire you have, if you simply ask, it will fulfill your desire. So what do you all want right now?
Go back to Godhead.
Okay, you can have it. What else do you want? Were you thinking about it till I asked you? We may want so many things. Now, if I sit under a desire tree and I say, please let a bag of hammers fall upon my head. And a bag of hammers falls upon my head. Whose fault is it? Mine or the tree? Mine or the tree? My fault, right? So, knowing what's good for me, what kind of desire to have, and knowing that Suhrit, the supreme friend, is there within the heart, fulfilling all my desires, this is knowledge. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Kshetraknam chapi mam vidhi sarva kshetri shubharata kshetra kshetraknayo jnanam yattach jnanam matam mama. He said, this is knowledge. To understand that this body is not me. It's the field. It's the machine. It's the instrument that I'm sitting in. So there's a difference between me and the field or the machine. And that beyond this body and myself, there's also a supreme entity who's supplying my intelligence, who's fulfilling all my desires, because I'm not independent in doing that. That's why, oh, please help me. And when I may think, a materialistic-minded person, when something good happens, thinks, what do I need God for? I'm so smart. I figured it out myself. And when something bad happens, he goes on CNN and says, there is no God. Because why would bad things happen to such a good person? And when a spiritually minded person who has begun to understand the presence of the benevolent, supreme source of everything who's there in a personal form, taking care of us, fulfilling our desires, when something good happens, he thinks I'm not worthy because he's living in gratitude. And when something bad happens, he thinks, I've done so many things to break the law in the material world, I deserved more, but I only got a token. So as I said, Krishna consciousness begins on this spiritual platform, and it's the life of joy, of happiness. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and taught a simple way that everyone in the world can participate in spiritual life, and it doesn't matter what position you're beginning from. If you take the practice of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you'll experience it for yourself. Just like when you eat food when you're hungry. You know that you're becoming nourished. You feel it. You know that your hunger's going away. And you feel the effects of the food on your body, that you're getting your strength back. So in the same way, by following the process of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this Krishna conscious practice, no one says that you have to believe it. You have to try it and experience it for yourself. And the simplest way to do that, and the most efficient way, is to repeat the names of God and listen. It's so pleasing to take the morning time when there's free nectar flowing through the air. Actually, there's a science behind this. There are various parts of the day that are differently charged. And in the morning time, early in the morning, there's a way in which there's free nectar floating through the air. And if you try a little bit of spiritual concentration early in the morning, without any other obligation, you will have the best chance of experiencing directly for yourself this fulfilling experience that you'll get from this kind of yoga, the yoga of chanting the name of God, which is a universal process. You can pick any name of God, and you can do it anywhere. But we recommend certain times, places, and also, if you want to experience it more, you can arrange your life in a certain way that you have the clearest kind of consciousness so that you can concentrate and feel the vibration. So early in the morning is a good time. If you just take some time to yourself early in the morning, and the night before you can plan for it. This is a technique that before you go to bed, plan that when I get up in the morning, I'm going to take some time for my spiritual practice. So set out the things that you need. If there's any spiritual paraphernalia you need, or a space that you have as a sacred space in your house, clean it up. Get it ready the night before. Because what happens is, as soon as you wake up in the morning, that's where your mind will go. Because it's ready for you. And if you leave your house in a shambles, and the night before you're looking at a computer screen just before you go to bed, or you have some problem you're worrying about, and you leave everything a mess, when you wake up, you won't know which way to go. You're not the same person when you wake up as when you went to bed. My father used to, before our family would go on vacation, he would make us clean the whole house, spotless, before we'd leave for the vacation. And then as a kid, I would say, why do we have to clean the house? We're not going to be here. But when we come back, I'd appreciate, well, who cleaned the house? That was some really nice person. I was a different person when I came back like that, because I totally forgot. And when you plan your spiritual experience for the next morning, the night before, when you wake up in the morning as a different person than you were when you went to sleep, because you fly off in all different places at night, you'll say, who is so thoughtful to get all this stuff ready for me in the morning? That's what you'll think. And then you'll take care of the most important thing that you need to take care of, and that's you. That's your spiritual soul. You are the soul. You need to take care of it. So if you do this in the morning time, and you simply sit down and repeat the names of Krishna, we recommend the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. It's a formula. It's a spiritual formula. And if you just take it, you're a winner. It'll work every time. It's guaranteed. Or karma back guaranteed. So you take this mantra, and you just repeat the mantra, and all you have to do is listen. And let the vibration pour over you. You know, when you sit in front of a computer screen, there's all kinds of vibrations pouring over you. And you don't even know it. There's in the sun, sometimes on a cloudy day. You know the song? I got sunshine on a... Come on, work with me now. I got sunshine on a cloudy day. One time in San Francisco, Golden Gate Park, on a cloudy day, I was walking around all day helping with the festival. And I thought, what do I need a hat for? Because it's a cloudy day. Next day, serious sunburn. Where did that come from? The rays come through the clouds. And there are all kinds of rays coming through from elements in this world, from the vibrations in this world. What to speak of all the artificial things, machines, and we already know there's vibrations coming from cell phones that we carry around and so forth. Practically, we're used to it in some ways. But it has an effect. So when you chant the names of God, there's immense power and energy that comes from that name of God. And Krishna Chaitanya said, Nam Nam Akari Bahuda Nija Sarva Shaktis. That this is the personal energy of God. He's personally appearing in his name, and all the powers that are there personally in Krishna himself are coming through his name. So to come to this point of joy, to come to the point of experiencing the difference between your body and yourself, all this can come through this kind of yoga, the mantra yoga, saying the name, because the power of God is there within the name. And two things to remember. Krishna is all-powerful. All-powerful means he can do anything at any time without any restriction. Is that okay? And he's all-merciful. Mercy means he really cares. He's compassionate. Now put those two things together and what do you get? Krishna. But this is an amazing combination. Now, if he was all-powerful, but he wasn't all-merciful, you'd be in big trouble. And if he's all-merciful, but he's not all-powerful, what can he do about it, right? But Krishna is all-powerful and all-merciful, and I'm not. I need help. I'm stuck. I'm lost, and all the troubles that I have in this world come from my independent thought and way of trying to arrange my life in such a way that I can find happiness in this world, but I'm misinformed. But if I take this one process that has been passed down and certified by great teachers of yoga throughout the millennia and simply sit down and practice the mantra and embrace the energy that's coming from God, let's just try it for a few times. We can even close our eyes and then do the thing we did earlier by feeling just for 30 seconds that there's earth, there's water, there's fire, there's air. Observe that it's not you. You're the one looking at it and see that you're not even your mind. Your mind's darting around from one place to another, but you can observe that. And you can also see your intelligence and feel the fact that you're the one radiating the energy out into this body. Please close your eyes just for a moment. And just be there and experience the fact that you're in the body. And then together we're going to repeat the mantra. And you don't have to think about it. Just be there with the mantra. And even if you don't believe in it, just for a moment, suspend disbelief. And realize that someone who's all-powerful and all-merciful, who wants to help you, is there within the name. And say the name with your heart. And we'll repeat it together. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So we talked just some basic philosophy, and then also talked about something practical that you can do. It's a takeaway. Anyone can take this away and practice it for themselves. And there are many books that talk about the difference between the body and the self and go into more details about the practice of spiritual life. And we recommend all of them. Even if you don't read them right away, these books have a very powerful vibration in and of themselves. You can keep them in your home, and they will assist you in your spiritual life. Hare Krishna. Welcome everybody who comes here, really, because it's a spiritual community. Our intention is to make everyone feel welcome, whatever background you come from, whether you're coming for the first time or whether you've been coming here for 30 or 40 years. It's important to us that you feel welcome. That's a good way to feel when you come into a spiritual community. So tonight, when you see other members who have come here, take some time to appreciate that these are rare souls. That's always a good practice anyway, to appreciate people. We're conscious living beings, and we're very sensitive. That's why we're called sentient. We're very sensitive. Hare Krishna. It's time for prasadam? Time for kirtan. So now, for those who are here for the first time, we're going to actually try some of the dancing. So we're going to practice this dancing, and I'll just show you one step for those who are new. Maybe some have been come for a while, and I'll just show you one dance step that you can try. It's an authorized step. You want to try it before we have the kirtan?
Yeah.
I'm not convinced.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Okay. Okay, you got to stand up too. Show you what's called the Swami step. Okay, everyone stand like this, feet shoulder width apart.
keep your hands in the air, and you're going to put one foot before the other and pivot like this, and then back. It's a graceful swing. It looks really good. I'm watching y'all. Now this is called the swami. Did everyone do the swami? Everybody does the same one?